La, da, 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 da. We are here. This is National Bugle Radio with Patrick Slattery. And we're going to have a very fine show for you today. We are just connecting up with Mark Collette from Britain. And I'm going to ask him lots of questions about Britain and about other places and about other things. While we're waiting for him, I want to refer to nationalbugle.com. This is my news amalgamation website, and it's a work in progress, but we've got a couple of interesting articles at the top. There's one: tensions escalate after Tillerson calls Trump moron. So apparently Rex Tillerson is not a fading daisy. He is not somebody who just fades back. Well, he got to be the head of ExxonMobil, which I think is still, if not number one, the number two biggest corporation in the world. And you don't get there by being shy. So he's apparently called Trump a moron. Let's face it. Sometimes Trump's a moron. And to have somebody in the cabinet who's willing to step up and say it, fine. And he hasn't been fired for it. So apparently Trump realizes there's a bit of truth in it. This CNN article continues and says that he has had such bad relationships, such fireworks with H.R. McMaster, the National Security Advisor, that Defense Secretary Mattis had to kind of get in between them or step in, intervene somehow. And that's a good thing, because from my reading, H.R. McMaster is a big problem. So this is certainly a good thing. We want to have, because let's face it, I voted for Trump. I supported Trump. Most of his appointments to his administration have been horrible, which is not necessarily a big surprise, because he didn't know a lot of people. He wasn't in the political world beforehand. We are having a little bit of trouble getting Mark Collette in. We will get him in. Mark Collette, he's from Great Britain. We'll get him in, if not before the break, at least during the break. But these horrible people in the Trump administration, you look at foreign policy, and it looked as if, you know, when on Inauguration Day, you had Tillerson, and at least you had General Flynn as National Security Advisor. And, of course, Flynn was I think, undermined from the get-go. And there are rumors that Mike Pence, the vice president, really undermined him, you know, because he talked about, there was some Zio Media news report that General Flynn had connections with Russia. And then Mike Pence comes out and talks to the press and said, well, I met with him and I asked him about it, and he denied it. Which then set up a situation where they could go out and say, oh, General Flynn lied to the vice president. And that was technically what he was fired for, not for connections to Russia, but for lying to the vice president. So that's a problem. So Tillerson wound up being isolated, because who was Flynn's replacement but this H.R. McMaster, who is basically a neocon. Now, he might be a neocon who thinks Israel's going too far. There's some people in Israel who don't think he's friendly enough to them. But let's face it, if he's trying to send a whole bunch of troops to Afghanistan, if he was part of this strike on Syria, if, you know, he's part of this saber rattling against Iran, he is doing the Zionist bidding. He is a neocon. And maybe, you know, there's a lot of American Jews who get pretty annoyed with Israel, because Israel sometimes goes too far and attracts a lot of bad attention to what otherwise, you know, the American Jews and the Israeli Jews don't necessarily have the same agenda. Seeing if we can bring in Mark Collette. Mark Collette.
Hello.
Hello. I don't know why I didn't hear that earlier. So you are now part of our conversation. You just missed the first few minutes. I was talking about this article with about Donald Trump being called a moron by his Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson. But Tillerson's not fired. And I think it's really important for Donald Trump to have somebody in his administration willing to call him a moron when he's being a moron.
Well, I think it's very, very odd indeed that Donald Trump has managed to get rid of all the people who were actually loyal to him, helped his campaign and would have stuck by him, and most importantly, people who were actually interested in spearheading the initiatives that he wanted to spearhead and that got him elected. But now people are calling him a moron. He's fine with that. And I think this probably is one of the final nails in the Trump coffin.
Well, Tillerson's one of the few grown-ups in the administration. I'm not sure how deeply you have investigated the American cabinet. And if Trump is not firing Tillerson after Tillerson called him a moron, I was hypothesizing that Trump realizes that he is being a moron and that he needs Tillerson, who's really perhaps Steve Miller, his speechwriter, might be on Tillerson's side. But I mean, he's one of the few non-neocons in the Trump administration, in the foreign policy establishment. You've got this General McMaster, whom I mentioned. You've got Nikki Haley, an Indian woman who was governor of South Carolina as the UN representative, the UN ambassador, who just spouts off whatever the Jews at the New York Times or Washington Post want her to spout off. She just says all this crazy stuff. And then you've got this Egyptian woman, Dina Powell, who is the assistant national security advisor, who, you know, I mean, a South Carolina governor doesn't have any experience in foreign policy, but Dina Powell was basically, she was like some sort of PR person at Goldman Sachs. I mean, she's got no experience. She's attractive, and maybe she was able to use certain other assets at her command in order to advance her career. I wouldn't know. But anyway, I don't want to spend the whole show on this. We're talking about this Indian woman, this Egyptian woman. This gets me, actually, what I wanted to ask you about was a lot of the things that are going on in Britain. And I'm just going to segue into it by saying that, you know, I'm my father's family, Slattery's, they trace back to a town called Tralee in County Kerry in Ireland. On my mother's side, we trace back to England. My father, too. Both of my parents were mixed English-Irish. But 30-something years ago, I went to a city in England called Wolverhampton, which I'm sure you're familiar with. It's somewhere around Manchester and Birmingham. It's somewhere in that area. And this was even 33 years ago. I was really surprised to walk past a schoolyard, and half the kids in the schoolyard were wearing these little turbans associated with the Sikh religion from, I guess, the Punjab province of India. Even then, and you know, walking around certain neighborhoods of London, you saw, well, a lot of Jamaicans, Africans, Pakistanis, whatever. And that was 33 years ago, but most of England was English, and Scotland was Scottish, and Ireland was Irish. There was no non-Irish, no non-whites for sure, not really hardly any non-Irish in Ireland. But all of that has changed rather dramatically, hasn't it?
It certainly has. I mean, we're now at a position, really, in England especially, where you can see just how far things have gone. I mean, in our primary schools, 33% of the children in English primary schools are now not ethnically English, or they're not white, basically.
Well,
they're essentially...
Okay, I do want to clarify that. That's regardless of whether they're public schools, primary schools, or private schools, state schools, whatever you call them. 33% of school children are non-English?
At the primary school level, which is primary schools are up to, I think it's 4 to 7 years old. So what you're talking here is a huge demographic shift, because what you've got to remember is in about 14 years, you're going to have a situation where a minimum of men aged 18 to 21, at a minimum, 33% of those are going to be non-white, a minimum, because obviously there's going to be increased immigration between
and
now and then.
I just want to clarify. You're saying 33% non-white, not just 33% non-English?
Yeah, 33% non-white.
Okay. And then there's plenty of non-English whites as well, right?
There is. I mean, obviously, I'm not as concerned. I'm not really as concerned about that as I am with the genetic and ethnic sort of destruction of our people. The issue here is we have been completely colonized. And for people who aren't sort of up with what's happening here in the UK, our capital city, London, is already majority non-white. Over 50% of the people in our capital are already non-white. And when you're looking at that situation, it's not just confined to London. It's also Birmingham, which is our second largest city. Mm-hmm. It's Leicester, which is another extremely large city. And this is spreading rapidly all over the country. The demographic change here is absolutely frightening, and it's taking place at such a rapid rate. You are literally seeing whole cities disappear. And when people say things like, oh, well, you know, something's got to change sooner or later. Well, nothing changed when London went non-white. Nothing changed when Leicester and Birmingham went non-white. And really, we do need to organize and organize quickly, because this is happening so rapidly. And the other huge problem we've got is we are letting in so many Muslim immigrants. And the Muslim immigrants, 80% of Muslims of the employable age range are unemployed. They're on benefits. So only 1 in 5 Muslims who are in the economically active age bracket are actually in employment. The rest are claiming state benefits. They're on welfare. They're essentially sat at home. And the white British taxpayer is more or less paying for them to have absolutely huge numbers of children. And that can be seen in the fact that year on year, Mohammed is the most popular boy's name in the UK.
Okay, so I want to ask you about that. So it seems that the Muslims are particularly problematic. Most of them would be from the Indian subcontinent, but there would be some from Africa as well, I would assume, and perhaps non-Muslim Africans and West Indians, blacks from Jamaica and whatnot, might be problematic as well. But let's first look at these Muslims from this Pakistan, Bangladesh, what have you. So it really they have such high rates of fertility. I understand that the Bangladeshi women is it 8 children per family, or is it 4, but they come over? So what is it? It's like extremely high rates, and then plus every male child they have is going to be betrothed to a female back in Bangladesh and be brought over. It's not even so much that they're marrying within their own community in Britain, but they're importing brides from Bangladesh.
Yeah, that's the case, but it goes a little bit deeper than that. What you tend to find is the males come here, and once the males are, you know, sort of bedded in and, you know, they're on benefits and they've claimed asylum or refugee status, they usually go to a Muslim country, as you said, and they will have an arranged marriage. They'll get a bride, they'll bring her over, and they'll begin breeding. But the problem you've got is Muslim marriage isn't recognized legally in the UK, so they can't be actually prosecuted for polygamy. Mm-hmm. So what they do, they marry more than one woman under the under their laws, they keep bringing them over. They have multiple wives. And because it's not classified as actually being married, the state then views the extra wives as actual single mothers. Mm-hmm. So it grants them their own houses. It gives them huge amounts of benefits. So you'll have one Muslim man, and he may be legally married to one woman, but then he has other wives who he is married to through his local mosque under the system of Sharia law. The state doesn't recognize that as a legal marriage. So the women are seen as single mothers, which allows them to have their own houses, gain welfare. And the thing to remember here is in the UK, we actually have a housing system which is inherently biased towards these immigrants, because it's based on a system whereby those with the largest families get housed first. So if you're a white single mum with one child, you will be put to the bottom of the housing queue, because at the top of the housing queue, there might be a Muslim woman who's the second or third wife to a Muslim male. It's not recognized by law, so she's classed as a single mother, and she's got four children by him. So she will be at the top of the housing queue, and that will mean that they get their own house much, much quicker than people on the housing list who are from, you know, mm-hmm. the indigenous population. And all of this is leading to mm-hmm. a very rapid expansion of the Muslim population. And as I said earlier, with 80% of Muslims who are in the employment age range bracket being unemployed, you can actually see that they're milking the entire system to a huge effect. Mm-hmm. And that effect is basically so they can stay at home and they can breed.
This is amazing. So it's not just rhetoric to say that the British taxpayer is funding his own replacement by Muslim invaders. I mean, this is not just rhetoric.
No. This is exactly what is happening. And if you go to places like, you mentioned Wolverhampton, well, I live near a city called Bradford, you can see how quickly that city has literally been overtaken by Muslims. And now you have a city which sort of, for want of a better analogy, it represents a donut. All the white people have moved to the outer edge, and the circle in the center is just totally free of dough, or in this case white people, because it's completely occupied by Muslims. And then you start seeing street signs in other languages. We pay huge numbers of interpreters, because the councils, the hospitals, the doctor's surgeries all have to have people who speak the relevant language that these people speak. Because as I said, many of them are brought over because the men go back to their countries, have children with them, marry them, bring them over here as wives. And because of that, we are literally pouring millions and millions of pounds of taxpayers' money into this. And one of my friends, his wife recently gave birth to their second child, and he said he was in the hospital and he said it was wall to wall immigrants. He was like one of the few white couples in there having a child. But he said that wasn't what shocked him. He said he expected to see that, but what he didn't expect to see with these teams of interpreters following people around in the hospital to just do things like take lunch orders. So when they walk around the hospital in the UK, they will offer everyone lunch, and they'll say, what would you like for your lunch? You know, pick a drink from the drink menu, pick a main from the main menu, and pick a dessert. And people will go down the menu and choose what they want. So everyone who's taking around the lunch trolley has to have an interpreter with them who can speak the relevant languages. And this is costing the taxpayer absolutely millions a year, because these
translators
people are
very expensive.
Yeah, very expensive. And all of these things have a huge knock-on effect. So it's not just the annihilation, as we've said, the ethnic annihilation of the, you know, ethnic English, Scots, Irish and Welsh. It's actually the fact that we're funding this. We are literally funding this. And these people are out of work. And I know I've spoken for quite a long time, but I just want to add this. The other day, Theresa May, our current Prime Minister, who's meant to be a Conservative, but as we all know, Conservatives, they're part of the problem, she came out and said she's commissioned this new report, which is very worrying because it shows that all these immigrants aren't getting jobs. And her sort of answer to this, or her analysis, should I say, of this report, is that it's all Whitey's fault, that Britain has such a toxic racist culture that that's what's keeping these people down. They're not coming here to milk the system. They're coming here for better lives, And somehow we're oppressing them and stopping them getting on in life. I mean, it's absolutely absurd, because how on earth could you expect to get on in life in a country where you don't even speak the language?
Yeah, that's amazing. I know we're coming up on the break, but I'm going to start my next question and see if it gets out there. So the Muslims from Pakistan or wherever are the most problematic. There are other immigrant groups, and there's the Indians, people from India. And my understanding is that their fertility rates are not that much different from the whites, that they are not nearly the kind of burden on the social welfare system. And so in many ways are much, much less problematic. Now, of course, India is a country of 1 billion. And even a small amount of migration from India to England could completely overwhelm it. And of course, they're also not white. They don't have a Christian heritage. So they're different, but they're not nearly as problematic. My question would be, among Indians in Britain, are they politically lining up with the Muslims as, you know, non-whites who are oppressed by whitey? Or are there any of them who are saying, you know, we've got it pretty good here, and these guys are rocking the boats. They're going to ruin it for everybody.
Well, that's a very interesting question. And the fact is, the Indians and the Sikhs, although I don't want them here in huge, overwhelming numbers, a tiny number of them wouldn't pose the same sort of threat that the Muslims do. They don't breed at the same rate, and they're much more sort of willing to adopt facets of English or British culture and fit in. And generally speaking, they tend to be sort of a better quality of people. However, again, I wouldn't want them flooding in. Now, they've obviously had huge problems with Islam in their own country. I mean, obviously, most listeners will know that India used to be one large country. Then it was partitioned into Pakistan and India. And obviously, that was because the Muslims, the Sikhs and the Hindus couldn't live together, with the Muslims being the notable problem who were causing trouble, and the Sikhs and Hindus, you know, wanted rid of them. So they formed Pakistan and there was the partitioning of India. Now, here in the UK, you do have some similarities in the fact that the Hindus and the Sikhs are far, far more wary of the Muslim population, and they don't really get on with them particularly well. You will have, obviously, the handshaking and the sort of, you know, photo opportunities for political purposes. But when I was active in the British National Party, which was the leading nationalist party of the day in the UK, when I was politically active doing leafleting and, you know, working in the sort of political sphere, and we did get a large number of Hindus and Sikhs come to us and literally warn us, saying, your biggest problem in the next, you know, few decades will be the growth of the Muslim population in Britain. And they came to us with their own horror stories of what it's like to live alongside these people when they become a sort of, what shall I call it, a sizable minority, so they can start exerting influence sort of socially and politically.
Now, in the United States, Professor Kevin MacDonald documented so well in his book, The Culture of Critique, in one of the chapters, the leading Jewish role in revising the immigration system, into passing the 1965 Immigration Act. It was known as the Hart-Celler Act. Senator Hart, I believe from Michigan, the sponsor in the Senate, and Congressman Celler, who was a longtime Jewish congressman, who had been fighting against the more restrictive Immigration Act of, I think, 1923, being the sponsor in the House. But the real force in the Senate wasn't even Senator Hart. It was Senator Jacob Javits, a Jewish Republican from New York. Maybe his name wasn't on the bill because he was a Republican and it was a Democratic bill. But there was this, without organized Jewish pressure, there would not have been a 1965 Immigration Act. Now, I understand in Britain it can be more difficult to talk about certain issues relating to Jewish power because you don't have First Amendment freedom of speech guarantees, and there's legislation that defines all sorts of what should be honest discussion would term it anti-Semitic hate speech. So I don't know to what extent you feel free in talking about this, but what is the Jewish role in leading this massive invasion of, you know, non-whites, especially Muslims from the subcontinent, into England? Is that something you can speak about?
It is, and it's a very interesting question, and I'm pleased you asked it. Now, it's very difficult for me to sum this up in sort of a one concise soundbite. Now, for your listeners, I actually have my own YouTube channel, and I did a video that was about 25 minutes long recently on the Jewish role in the refugee crisis here in Europe. And what you actually see is the Jews are playing a leading role in pushing for the acceptance of refugees in Europe. They are openly campaigning as NGOs, non-governmental organizations, to help refugees come here, to attract refugees, and to help disperse them throughout Europe. And it goes a little bit further than that as well. Israel actually sends their Israeli refugee agency, which is called Israel Aid. Now, Israel Aid is quite an interesting group, because Israel Aid is sort of misleading, really, because they're not actually campaigning in Israel for Israel to welcome refugees into Israel. They are sent out by Israel to Europe to help Muslim refugees come to Europe, which to me seems kind of strange, because these people who simply do not want to live alongside any refugees and come from a country that have a history of taking zero refugees, especially from countries like Syria or Iraq, where a huge number of these refugees are coming from, these people, rather than taking them into their own country or even campaigning to take them into their own country, come here to Europe to campaign in our countries to pressure our governments and to welcome refugees here and attract them to coming to Europe. And I find that absolutely absurd. But as I said, I did an entire podcast on that, and it really is worth listening to, because it lists the number of different Jewish groups in the UK that have all firmly stood behind the pro-refugee cause, and it really is overwhelming. And when you look at all of that evidence, you can see that whilst Israeli Jews, or Jews in Israel, or in fact Jews in the West, who...
We are coming up on our break, but we will be back with much more of Mark Collette from Great Britain. So please stay tuned.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to aroutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AirOutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
I guess I said that prematurely. That's Hava Nagila. I like it as bumper music. We are back with Mark Collette. So, Mark, please continue.
Well, I was really just wrapping up on the issue where you see the role of sort of Jewish-funded NGOs in Europe who are working very hard to welcome specifically Muslim refugees from the Middle East here into Europe, when they simply wouldn't tolerate that one bit in Israel. And one interesting thing to note is the British Board of Deputies, who are the most powerful Jewish organisation in the UK, they are fully committed to welcoming these refugees into the UK, which seems very odd because it shows the short-sightedness of these groups. For example, in France, where they've done exactly the same thing, Jewish groups have historically been very pro-refugee, have welcomed, you know, tens and tens, hundreds of thousands of these Muslim refugees into France. They have been then on the receiving end of attacks by these refugees. And it's extremely short-sighted because ultimately they're building a situation in Europe which is going to be like a tinderbox. And believe me, the Jewish community is not going to be the beneficiaries of this Islamic immigration. In fact, it's going to be a huge threat to their community.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I really love having you on the show, and I would like to keep asking you questions for the rest of the hour. But we do have callers on this show, and not necessarily every show, but if somebody out there has what they think is a really good question for Mr. Collette, our number is 1-800-313-9443. But I want to ask you, I know you had your Brexit vote last year, and I know you were very much involved in the Brexit campaign. But for the time being, the United Kingdom is still an EU member. And, you know, it's very curious. You've got the EU and the European Commission that seems so hell-bent on basically the destruction of Europe. You wonder who they represent. Now, the European Parliament is, it's voted on through elections. You've got elections in Britain to send people to the European Parliament, elections in every country to send their representatives to the European Parliament, which is, I believe is in Strasbourg. And, you know, like all elections where you've got elections, you've got Jewish money. And so it shouldn't be a mystery that you would have a great deal of Jewish influence in, certainly in the European Parliament. I'm not exactly sure of the organizational relationship between the Parliament and the European Commission, who's responsible to whom. But you have this European Commission, you have the EU, and they seem to be trying to force infinite numbers of Somalis and Nigerians and Afghans and people from who knows where onto countries that clearly don't want them, like Hungary or Poland. Not that Britain really wants them, but Britain at least has a government that is so captured by these, you know, Zionist and other crazy interests that it's willingly importing people. But Hungary does not. The Hungarian government doesn't want them. The Polish government doesn't want them. Yet the EU is pushing on them. What can you talk about in terms of what the EU or the European Commission is doing in order to destroy their own territories?
Well, it's very interesting you've asked this question. Now, obviously, I was very, very active campaigning for Brexit in the UK. And I'd first like to say to all the listeners, Brexit has been completely betrayed. The Conservative Party, they promised they would carry through exactly what the people voted for. And so far, every time it's come down to making a decision or actually doing something, the Conservative Party have done their best to kick the ball into the long grass. Now, originally, David Cameron, he was meant to trigger Article 50, which would take us out of the EU on the morning of the vote, if that's what people voted for. He resigned. So basically, he reneged on his promise. He basically said he wasn't going to be the man that took us out of the EU. And by resigning, he got out of doing that. Then Theresa May, she was elected as leader of the Conservative Party, and she then left it months and months before she did anything, which allowed the absolutely horrific Gina Miller and a gang of rich businessmen whose interests lie with internationalism to essentially take legal action to slow the whole process. Now, since that, Theresa May has said she has actually activated Article 50, but rather than moving forward in a decisive manner, everything seems to have stalled now, and we're looking at between a 2 and 4 year process to get out of the EU. And when we're talking about getting out of the EU, they're now debating whether we're going to leave in full or in part or remain part of the common market. And if we do remain part of the common market, this is the really big point, that will have to include freedom of movement, which will allow anyone who is a EU passport holder to essentially move to Britain and have complete freedom to come and go as they please without a visa. And that's a massive, massive issue, because when the Brexit vote happened, when all that took place, one of the big things that people voted for wasn't just Brexit. People voted as a huge protest against the establishment. And one of the things they were protesting against was mass immigration. It was a way that people could finally say enough is enough. And people voted in favour of Brexit. They voted against the establishment. They voted against the internationalists. And it was a huge anti-immigration vote. And I think this is something that, in time, will be seen as one of the largest betrayals of the British public in history, because they are trying to completely derail this. And the EU is so pro-immigration. The EU has let millions of Middle Eastern and African migrants flood in. They've dispersed them all over Europe. And this is the key point here. They are now trying to push them into all-white, cohesive Eastern European communities. Now, the interesting point is Eastern Europe doesn't want them. Hungary, Poland, Czech Republic, they don't want them. They're just saying, no, we don't want these people. They're not going to be welcome here. Our people don't want them. So don't bring them here. But the strange thing is, the immigrants don't want to go there either. The immigrants are quite clear on the fact that they want to go to Germany, they want to go to France, and they want to go to, quite crucially, the UK, because they want to go to nations that have the best welfare systems. Because these people, crucially, many of them are not refugees. They're economic migrants. And that's why when you see the pictures of these people, they are overwhelmingly young men of fighting age mm-hmm. who, if you think you were coming from a war-torn country, well, it would be customary for men of fighting age to be fighting.
Right, refugees should be the women and the elderly and the children.
Yeah.
Not the fighting age men.
You know, it's a great European tradition that when the boat starts to go down, it's women and children first. But you see many of these migrants, and some of them even look like bodybuilders. You know, they look like, you know, look like the only thing they're missing is a protein shake. And when you see these people flooding in, they've all got smartphones. They look quite well dressed. They don't look disheveled. They don't look like they've had a hard time. They literally simply dump all their papers. As soon as they get to Europe, they dump all their papers, destroy them. And if you don't have papers and you can't prove where you come from and you say, look, I'm seeking asylum, I came from Syria, they have to take your case seriously. That's the law. So unfortunately, when they get into Europe, especially when they get into a country which is part of the Schengen zone, which allows complete freedom of movement, they can just whiz around all over the place. And I am 100% positive that hundreds of thousands of these people have disappeared that way. And then even if they are caught, the left, the EU, the political machine is always calling for amnesties. Right now, Sadiq Khan, mayor of London, Muslim mayor of London, should I add, the one who's famous for saying terrorism is just part and parcel of living in a big city, he's constantly talking about amnesties. And these amnesties, they're not one-time, one-off specials. They have one amnesty, and 10 years later, they're talking about the next amnesty. So really, it's not an amnesty. It's just the facilitation of mass immigration, the legalization of illegal immigrants. And this is happening all over Europe. And wherever it does happen, you see these absolutely huge social problems. And I'm not just talking about the obvious big issue, which is terrorism. I'm talking about the waves of sexual assaults, the waves of anti-white racist attacks, all of the cultural issues that come with trying to mix these people with the European people. And I'll just give you a small example of this. I used to know a girl who lived in Luton. She worked in Luton. If she walked to work in a dress on a summer's day, she would have abuse hurled at her and she would be spat at by members of the Muslim community. And you have this huge friction between them and us because they're not coming here wanting to fit in. They're not coming here wanting to be part of Britain, to embrace British culture, to be part of our society. They're coming here as a culturally hostile group of people that wants to aggressively impose their culture on the native people. And then you have these horrific traitor politicians who then turn around and say, well, actually, it's the British people who need to learn to accept Muslims. It's the British people who could learn an awful lot from Islamic culture. What can we
that
learn?
That was Prime Minister, the outgoing guy, Cameron, who said that, right?
Numerous MPs have said that, and I believe that Theresa May, the current Prime Minister, has also said that herself. I mean, there's pictures on my Twitter of her attending mosques wearing a headscarf. She is simply what can be described as an appeaser. She is bending over backward for the Muslim vote, and that's the key thing. That's the key thing, Patrick. When these Muslims go to any country, they are a culturally cohesive body. They're not like whites. They're not atomized. They're not individualistic. They're not hedonistic. They're not materialistic. They don't think about self. They think about the good of their group. And let me explain with a quick sort of mathematical way how this affects the UK. Well, let's say the Muslim population
is 25% in a local voting area. Now, in an election, you're probably going to get around 50% turnout. Okay, 50%. Well, if all of the Muslims vote, which they usually do, and they vote as a block because their imams in their mosques tell them how to vote, they go out and they vote together and they have a very, very high voter turnout. So if they're just 25% of the population, you'd think, well, whites still outnumber them 75 to 25. So if it comes to a vote, you know, how would they win? Well, the fact is, most whites don't vote. Mm-hmm. And that's a big problem. So in an election where there's 50% turnout, if all the Muslims turn out to vote, essentially, that gives them 50% of the vote on the day. So any candidate that panders to them is guaranteed victory. So that shows how a minority that is culturally cohesive and motivated to go out and vote as a bloc can overwhelm an apathetic majority. And that's the problem.
I'd like to translate that to our American listeners. So you can think we have the black vote, which is you know, they'll vote 90-something percent for the Democratic candidate. And we see what a huge role they played in the Democratic primaries. The white voters were in the Democratic primaries. The white voters were overwhelmingly for Bernie Sanders. Well, I shouldn't say overwhelmingly, but majority for Bernie Sanders. But the blacks were so lined up behind Hillary that that's the only reason she beat Bernie Sanders. But the difference between the blacks in America and the Muslims in Britain seems to be that in America, while the blacks are a unified voting bloc, they are not a particularly active voting bloc. Their voting rates are rather low. They, you know, in some precincts, there's probably some corruption and people who didn't actually show up for the polls are listed as having voted. But their voting rates are low. Imagine the power that a cohesive bloc would have, even if it's 12 or 16%, if they're voting in unison with each other and voting at higher rates than whites, because whites here, you know, maybe half of whites vote, but only a third of blacks vote. What if you had an active voting bloc like that? And that's what you're describing in Britain.
It certainly is. And just for reference, I've just looked up one of the MPs who we were talking about earlier. And this, I read this, this is a headline. Building bridges. White Brits should learn from Muslims to make the country a better place, top MP claims. Brexit rebel Anna Sowbury said that Muslims could teach white British people many a good thing. And this is exactly the kind of trash these people talk about. I mean, I'm not really sure what they're going to teach us. Are they going to teach us about terrorist attacks? Are they going to teach us about acid attacks, forced marriages, female genital mutilation? Are they going to teach us how to be part of grooming gangs? I don't know. But from my position, and I'm being completely candid here, these people have brought us, other than takeaway food, very little, if anything, that can be described as positive anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I always find it very telling that liberals will often stand on their little pedestal and they love to tell us just how wonderful multicultural society is, how it's enriched us all, how it's brought us so many benefits, this wealth of benefits. But when you actually try to tie them down to this and say, you know, what have these people brought us that actually truly benefits Britain? They usually start to choke shortly after they've talked about takeaway food, because there is very little. You know, these people haven't come here. They haven't come here and become great inventors. They've not come here and become great humanitarians. They've not improved British life in any sort of notable way beyond the fact, you know, that they sell a lot of takeaway food to us. And yes, British people do enjoy a curry, but I don't really think it's worth mortgaging your entire racial existence, you know, for a chicken korma.
No, not indeed not. And one, I mean, you had a long list of detriments to society from immigration. One more you could add is disease, because I know it's the case in America, and I'm sure it's the case in Britain and Europe as a whole, these people are coming from areas where, you know, the sub-Saharan Africans are bringing AIDS, the Somalis and Ethiopians are bringing tuberculosis. I know in America we've got a huge problem because the Mexicans are twice as likely to be diabetic as Americans. And so now you already have a national health insurance system. We don't, and we're not going to be able to get one because nobody wants to be subsidizing the health care of the Somali or Guatemalan peasantry. But I would imagine that your health insurance system, your national health system, is probably being completely overburdened by the immigrant population and second-generation population.
I'm so pleased you've actually asked this question, because we have a huge problem in the UK in that obviously we have a national health service, but we have this huge issue, and it's called health tourism, where people from all over the world...
And you'll need to continue that thought after the break.
Are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers...
Thank you.
and welcome back. And Mark Collette, you were talking about, the burden on the healthcare system of immigration, and you were talking about the phenomenon in Britain of health tourism. Could you please continue?
Yeah, I was talking about the problem we have with health tourism. You see, the issue in the UK is anyone can walk into any hospital and just gain healthcare. Now, this is obviously a great system if you have a country with closed borders, a high trust, high IQ society where people don't try to abuse the system. But instead, we now have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of immigrants pouring in every year. And that's not an exaggeration. I'll just furnish you with this sort of little bit of information. Last year, Theresa May, she let in 650,000 immigrants into the UK legally. And she estimates that a further 200,000 slipped in illegally. So going on her figures, that means 850,000 immigrants came into the UK last year, which is more immigrants coming into the UK in a single year than came into the UK between 1066, which was the last time we were successfully invaded, till 1939, which was the outbreak of the Second World War. So that just shows what an absolutely massive immigrant wave is hitting this country year on year. And when these people do come here, many of them are health tourists. They're people who come here knowing that they can simply walk into any hospital and get treatment. So you have people
with even without a visa, just like tourists.
Yep. Anyone. If you've got into the UK and you walk into a hospital, you're in. That's it. They will treat you. Very few questions are asked. And you've got people from all over the world coming here simply to play the system. Now, this has two huge effects. The first is the financial effect. Now, we talked briefly earlier about the interpreters, because they all, or many of them, need interpreters. You've also got the fact that all this hospital treatment is extremely costly. And it's costing the taxpayer, who is, as we discussed again earlier, overwhelmingly the indigenous people, the white people of the UK. Now, the other huge effect this has is obviously every one of these people who takes up a bed in a hospital is denying a bed in a hospital to the taxpayer.
Okay, Mr. Collette, I hear our swan song. I would love to have you come back on again because there's so much we haven't gotten a chance to talk about.
I'd love to be back again, Patrick. It's always a pleasure working with you, and thank you for all the listeners that tuned in.
Okay, great. So we will be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio. In the meantime, go to nationalbugle.com, check out my headlines, go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, and send some shekels to keep this project going.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap, but did you know some companies take shortcuts? At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.